Good evening. We're just waiting for the last few people to move into the room, but want to welcome you to tonight's Illinois Issues Forum, a nonpartisan event here at College of DuPage. I'm Dan Bindert, station manager at WDCB. We're known by many of you as Chicago's home for jazz, but we also have been known for many, many years as a station that brings you jazz, blues, news, and more. And as part of our news and public affairs outreach, we're undertaking tonight's event. Brian O'Keefe, our news director at WDCB, is also the host of Daylight Edition every weekday morning from 5 to 6 a.m. and also our morning newscast that you hear during our jazz programming. He'll be the host for tonight's event, and he's going to tell you more about it in just a moment. We want to, before we get started, thank very briefly our local sponsors at I Have a Bean Coffee in Wheaton, and also at Chicks and Salsa Mexican Grill in Glen Ellen. And thank you. We thank them for their support. And we'd also like to thank AARP Illinois that is helping to put together events like this across the state, as is our partner station that is working with us on tonight's event, NPR Illinois, which is WUIS in Springfield, Illinois. And they obviously have, being in Springfield, a closeness to this issue that we're going to be talking about throughout the evening. So we thank you for coming out to the event. And before we get started, want to welcome from WUIS, NPR Illinois, our partner station in tonight's event, Randy Eccles.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, everyone. Really appreciate the turnout tonight and you taking the time to come and talk about the budget and how it affects you. We are doing a listening tour through about 11 markets in Illinois. And sitting in the state capitol, we realized that a lot of people hadn't had the opportunity to say how the budget was impacting them. And having done two of these forums already, we've heard a lot of people who didn't realize some of the details of how the budget process is working. So we're looking forward to this great panel tonight discussing that. And we're just happy as the State House Bureau that delivers news with Brian Mackey and things to WDCB to be a part of this. And right now I'd like to introduce our sponsor, the president of AARP Illinois, Bob Gallo.
Thanks, Randy, and thanks all of you for being here this evening. I know it's not the most wonderful weather, so you made the extra effort to come out. I'm glad you arrived safely. Illinois is a unique state, and right now, not in a good way. It's the only state in the United States that is incapable of passing a budget. And the pain of that so many people across the state are feeling, is unconscionable, wrong, and immoral in our opinion. So we've joined with NPR Illinois and their and the affiliate stations. And we're calling our effort at AARP, Enough is Enough. And you'll be hearing more and more about that as we go forward. But as you listen to the panelists this evening, think about your role in this, because when you have a government that is dysfunctional and the electorate, you, the voters, are not demanding change of each of your representatives, and I say that because the leadership can't get along right now. So the only thing that's going to change this, in our opinion, is if you contact your specific legislator in the House and Senate and tell them they're not doing their job. And tell them that they represent your interests, and to make excuses and to blame somebody else is not solving the problem, so they have to get back to work. So, you know, I was reading a story in Cranes this evening about our utility rates that will be going up again at the end of this year and even more the next year. They can vote to raise your utility rates. They can vote to bail out Exelon Nuclear Power Plant, who's hugely profitable, but they can't pass a budget. It's the basic job of the governor and the legislator in every state in the country to pass a budget. So listen, but at the same time, act when we're done. There'll be folks standing at the doors as you're leaving. There's a card here that lets you take action. There's an 800 number that will connect you to your representative. And I really hope that not just coming here to listen, but to take action yourselves and demand that our elected officials go back to work and solve the problems of the state and put Illinois back on the path to fiscal help. So thank you very much. And let me turn it over to Brian for the panelists. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. So, first, I just want to thank everyone for coming out this evening, because certainly the weather has been not, we've had great March weather. And you have come out to have this discussion this evening on what is a very opportune evening, because this afternoon, the state Senate has passed almost all of what has been called for the past 6 months or so, the grand bargain. Roughly a $37.3 billion budget was approved by the state Senate this afternoon. It includes a $5 billion income tax increase that they say will lead to a balanced budget. Shortly after that vote was taken in the state Senate, the governor issued a news release indicating that he would not approve that budget unless it includes a property tax freeze, which it does not. So while there was some action, we may be right where we started again. Illinois is now, the last time Illinois had a full year budget was June 30th of 2015. And a lot of stuff has happened to bring us to the beginning of June 2017. I was having a conversation with someone at the station this morning about this forum this evening. And one of the things they said to me was, yeah, I know it's bad, but I don't really feel like it's affecting me. And that's the conversation that we need to have tonight, because a lot of your neighbors are saying the same thing. Yeah, I know Illinois doesn't have a budget, but my kids are still going to school, and my pension payment's still coming in the mail and getting direct deposited. I don't really feel like it's affecting me. So that's the conversation that we want to have tonight. I'm frequently asked why I wear a bow tie, and there are many reasons. Tonight I'm wearing a bow tie that I bought several years ago at a scholarship auction. This particular tie was owned by the late Senator Paul Simon. Aww. And I thought I would share a quote from Senator Simon that I hope we can all remember as we have this conversation this evening, because this is not a conversation about pointing fingers or shouting at people who disagree with us or playing the blame game. There's plenty of blame game to go on. But Senator Simon said, life would be unbearable hating people who disagree with you, because sooner or later, almost everyone disagrees with some measure. This becomes important to government because it means men and women who disagree can sit down after a debate and discuss their disagreements with relative calm and come to a compromise. That's what we need in Illinois, is for everyone to sit down, recognize they may disagree, but they have to find a compromise. I want to introduce you to our panel this evening. Julie Yurko is president and CEO of the Northern Illinois Food Bank. Kirk Dillard is a former state senator and current chairman of the Regional Transportation Authority. RTA serves as an umbrella organization for the mass transit providers in the Chicago area. And Angela Adkins is executive director of NAMI DuPage. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And one of the things I thought we would do to start this evening is talk about some of those impacts. So, Julie, your organization doesn't necessarily see direct impact from this budget stalemate, but you see it on a daily basis nonetheless. What do you see?
Absolutely. So in our work at the food bank, we are a distributor of groceries to over 800 feeding sites across 13 counties in Illinois. Our work is very highly funded by private contributions. So 82% of the food we distribute is given to us. Only 10% of that food actually comes from the government, and that's all coming from the federal government. Sure. So we receive no state funding, which over the last few years has been a real blessing for us because of the crisis. What we do have, though, is that food, the funding is flowing through the state, whether it's for our after-school feeding programs or our summer feeding programs or some of the commodities food that we get. And so we have seen delays in payment on that. But again, when I'm looking at less than 10% of my business, for us, it's okay. We're okay. Now, sadly, the families that we serve, all of our neighbors that are living in our 13 counties, they are coming to us because they have a resource gap. So that means that when they look at their monthly budget and they look at how am I going to go to the grocery store and pay my utility bills, pay for education, housing, transportation, my medical bills, I don't have enough at the end of the month. And so what we do, our work is, well, we can help you supplement your resources by giving you this wonderful food that's nutritious and exactly what you need, and you can come and get it in a very dignified way. When those resources are taken away from some of these other areas that are dependent on state funding, mm-hmm. that means their gap becomes wider. And so that means that they are going to need to come to us and get even more from us in terms of their food relief.
And one of your partner agencies, the Loaves and Fishes in Naperville, mm-hmm. I've talked with several times. And when you talk about that resource gap, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be something tremendous. It could be a new set of, you need a new set of tires
yes.
for your car.
Yes.
And so you buy the tires, mm-hmm. but the money's gonna come from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they find themselves at a food pantry.
Exactly. Usually it's not. You know, usually we're talking a few $100s. But they simply do not have those resources to pay to go get their medicines or to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as, you know, when we see things like assistance for childcare being cut, that means it's going to cost them more to find a place to put their children while they work. 77% of our families are working families. And so they have to invest more there, which means the resource gap in other areas is going to get larger. Mm-hmm. We have seen across the United States, over the last couple of years, we've actually seen a decrease in food insecurity, which is terrific, from about 48 million Americans to 42 million Americans. However, those who are in need, that their need has increased, and that's being driven by food costs, but it's also being driven by issues like we have here in Illinois with the budget.
Mm-hmm. Kirk, your agency is dealing very directly with this stalemate, this impasse.
You know, Brian, it's one that's often overlooked, and I always see the you know, and I tell my board at the Regional Transportation Authority, look, if you think we have it bad, you could be, you know, you could be the College of DuPage or the University of Illinois, mm-hmm. or you could be working with the, you know, with people with disabilities, mm-hmm. or hospitals that haven't received payments. But the Regional Transportation Authority sort of gets lost in the discussion, but as of this afternoon, Brian, the state of Illinois owes the Regional Transportation Authority, which is the CTA, Metra, and PACE, $454.8 million. We're 10 months behind in our payments, and unlike vendors who actually get paid interest by the state of Illinois, we at the RTA go out and we borrow the $454 million. Costs us a couple of million a year, but what could I do with a couple of million? You know, I could replace cars on Metra. We could improve service. You know, we have to scale back sometimes on service that we have out there. But a third of all the RTA's equipment is beyond its useful life. And we have a backlog of what we call the state of good repair, just to maintain what we have, of nearly $30 billion. And so we have we move 2 million people a day. You know, that's a sixth of the population of Illinois, and we read a lot of bad stuff about our state, which we all love, or you wouldn't be here, like I wouldn't be here tonight. But we do have a success story, and that success story is that in the central business district of Chicago, we have had more corporate relocations to Chicago than any other place in America. And that's great, because I have young high school age children, and I want our millennial generation, graduates of the College of DuPage, graduates of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, University of Chicago, DePaul, where I was at. I'm double dipping with campuses today, but I started my day at DePaul University. I'm in Lincoln Park. I want our kids to stay here. We are approaching soon that half of our workforce will be the millennial generation. The millennial generation lives on mass transit, and they live on Uber. Chicago has the lowest percentage of millennials that own automobiles of any city in the United States. The mayor of Indianapolis recently said that if you want millennials to stay in your city, and we want our kids to stay here, trying to sell them your city without mass transit is like trying to sell them a phone without a camera. So, you know, we forget sometimes, and part of it's me, just because I feel guilty that there are other more worthy causes that certainly need the state to step up faster than the RTA. But the RTA is critical for economic development, and we are one of the major reasons that there have been these corporate relocations. I grew up here, and more people live and work in downtown Chicago and the South Loop today than ever before in the city's history. The elevated trains are at their all-time highest capacity, and Metro a year ago was at its second highest capacity. So there are very good things going on economic development-wise in certain parts of Illinois, and we need to fuel those because they pay for the schools in Glen Ellyn or Cairo. But, you know, the RTA, which moves 2 million people a day, is being impacted by this budget. I know that they're looking at making further cuts, especially with transportation for people with disabilities. Everybody, my wife and others, say, hey, what does PACE do? You know, where do they move? I always tell my wife, don't forget that PACE moves literally in increasing, and it increases by double digits numbers as we get older as a society, more people with disabilities than ever before. And PACE is a lifeblood for people to get to their doctor's appointments or to have contact with the real world, to be able to stay in their homes. And the state is looking at and has cut funding for transportation with people with disabilities. So, you know, we're all in this together. We'll talk a little bit more about higher education. I'm on the College of DuPage's foundation board, and I stay very active with my undergraduate alma mater, Western Illinois University. You know, one of those rural universities that's in a world of hurt, lost half its budget in the last couple of years and is barely staying afloat while it tries to compete and not have students go across the border to Iowa, but to keep our Illinois children in Illinois, not only to go to college, but when they graduate, so they're around here with us as well. So, Brian, thank you for doing this. Thank you all for coming out on a gray and cloudy night. At least it's nice to know somebody really does care about the state's budget situation besides the four of us up here.
Kirk, one of the things that I'm surprised you didn't mention it, because frequently when I talk with you or your counterparts in mass transit, especially Metra, you're quick to point out that some of your equipment dates back to the Eisenhower administration, which points to a twofold issue, especially with regard to transit. And that is the capital bill. There is Illinois, the budget that I mentioned earlier is not capital spending. That's the operating budget. And until that gets squared away, the prospects for a capital bill seem remote, and that's another impact.
We have not had in Illinois a capital or infrastructure spending bill in 6 years, and I watch every day our competing cities that compete for, you know, my daughter to go work there, whether it's Seattle or San Francisco or Boston or Dallas, Texas. These other states, in fact, I just did a press conference a week ago in Washington, D.C. with the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce and my counterpart from the Phoenix Mass Transit Agency. Both Indiana and Phoenix have told me they have their money set aside to do matching money for Donald Trump's or President Trump's $1 trillion of expected, you know, national infrastructure money. Illinois hasn't had a capital bill in 6 years. We certainly don't have our matching money set aside when it's time to go. We just don't get a new, you know, the red line modernization on the elevated. We have to have a matching local fund. And when President Obama, on his way out, gave $1.2 billion for the Red Line and Purple Line modernization in Chicago, it had to be matched with $1 billion of local money. Mayor Emanuel did something called a tax increment financing district, and that's how we had our local match. No help from the state. But all the other states really are investing in mass transit, especially, I always tell, I'm a Republican, this is not a partisan issue, but red states like Texas and Utah are really investing heavily. And then I was just with Indianapolis, obviously that's Vice President Pence's state. When the new governor of Indiana took over, and he was Mike Pence's lieutenant governor, the very first thing he did was pass a gas tax increase in Indiana so that they would have the matching money to be able to access some of the $1 trillion of President Trump. And, you know, we're not positioned to do that in Illinois. We'll talk a little bit later, Brian, I'm sure. But, you know, I believe that the state's operating budget and capital budget ought to go hand in hand. And I'm a former legislator. If you're going to ask my former colleagues to make some incredibly, incredibly difficult votes in the next 7, 8, 10 days, it makes it easier to pass the operating budget of the state if you have a capital bill where they can go back to Effingham and say, you know, we're finally going to get this new interchange, or we're finally going to get something new.
Right.
The two go hand in hand. It's like the old song, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. I've always believed, and I was a former chief of staff to a governor in the state, that the two go hand in glove, and it helps you pass some very difficult things if you have something positive out there to be able to tell people back home that you're doing, especially if it helps economic development.
And the, part of the reason I mentioned that capital spending is so much of the pain and so much of the impact of this budget stalemate is hidden. And that is an element, an area where it is hidden. You don't see that there's not a capital budget in place, and that there can't be probably until this other budget is taken care of. And in the realm of hidden impacts, Angela, you deal with a constituency that unfortunately for a lot of people is invisible and costly.
Yes, it really is. So just for those of you that aren't so aware of the services that we provide, we're an organization that has been around for 32 years in DuPage County. We're a national organization, and we provide support and education and workforce development programs and social recreational programs for individuals and their families who are living with mental illness. And what I want to talk to you about tonight is life and death, because this is literally what we are talking about with mental illness and the invisible costs of this state budget. Like Julie, we actually don't get funded by the state, but the fallout of the organizations that do provide mental health services, mm-hmm. that do or did receive state funding is colossal. We serve about 40,000 families and individuals each year, and that number is increasing. We've seen multiple increases from that over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's not them and us. Mental illness, I can guarantee that in this room, there are some of you that are dealing personally with your own mental health issues. There are some of you that have close family members that are dealing with serious mental health issues. 1 in 5 people have a mental health issue. And that can be depression, that can be anxiety. And the invisible costs of these cuts, mental illness has always been misunderstood and underfunded for many, many years. Going back to the 60s, when many of the state hospitals closed, and whether the rights or the wrongs of putting people in those kind of situations, the fact remains that there wasn't an infrastructure put in place. There was no resources put in place to really take care of those individuals. Hence, we get many, many people that are obviously living on the streets. And now those of you that have followed Tom Dart from the jail in Chicago are probably very well aware that that's now considered one of the nation's largest institutions for those that are mentally ill. It costs about $38,000 to incarcerate somebody. Thresholds had programs. They're one of the largest mental health organizations, and they are owed $4 million over from the last couple of years from state funding. So they've had to close many, many of their programs. They can provide community care, residential care, therapy, and really being able to get that individual back on their feet for about $4,000 a month, where you can do the math. And unfortunately, what we're going to see from this is more and more people that are homeless. So when it was first stated that, you know, it doesn't seem to impact our community, I can assure you that over the next few years, we are going to see far more people that are homeless. Those people are then going to be arrested and they're going to be jailed. And the whole infrastructure of human services in general is dissipating. We can't put that infrastructure back overnight. That infrastructure has gone. United Way, every quarter have been doing, for the last 2 years, have been doing surveys, and they are showing and talking about the programs that have closed, the loss of work for the individuals that worked in that nonprofit health arena. It's massive. It's absolutely massive. Well, even if that funding comes back, we can't put that infrastructure back. It's going to take years. And when you talk about the mental health population, some of whom would do extremely well if they're given that support and those programs in the community and can come back to being a productive member of society, that's gone because they become far more symptomatic. Their symptoms increase to a point where they're not getting medication. You know, if you have a physical illness, I just have a girlfriend that is going through a newly diagnosed cancer prognosis. And, you know, the care and the treatment that she's getting is phenomenal. Yes, she has decent insurance, but she's getting good care. She's being able to make those appointments. You imagine if something goes wrong with your brain and you can't get an appointment for 3 to 6 months because you're on the lower end of that economic scale and there just aren't the psychiatrists. The psychiatrists that would take Medicaid no longer want to do it because they're not getting paid. And even with the Affordable Health Care Act and now this new potential act in place, it's always the people, unfortunately, with mental illness that are being sidelined. And the invisible cost of that is going to be phenomenal for decades to come. The homelessness, the incarceration, the aging parents, the aging baby boomers that are trying to look after emerging adults with severe disabilities that are no longer going to be around. It's a real, real problem, and it's a problem that all of us are going to have to deal with. So, again, I also thank you for coming out on this bad evening. But these are, you know, with each one of these issues, they are infrastructures that are crumbling and are not going to be put back just if by the signing of a bill it says, okay, we'll release some of these funds. You know, many of those people that worked in the human health services, and particularly in the nonprofit world, have disappeared because not through choice, they've been laid off. They no longer have those positions. You can't build that restructure back up again. So the impact is great, and it might seem as if it's invisible because it hasn't directly impacted you. But I would hazard a guess there isn't many. There are a few people in this room that know exactly what I'm talking about, and it has had a huge impact. And, you know, not to be the black sort of widow, it's going to get worse and before it gets better, because we can't rebuild this as quickly as we need to.
I had a conversation with a child care provider probably about 6 months ago, and they were dealing with the fact that they were losing subsidized child care in communities. Mm-hmm. And I said to this advocate, well, if the state passes a budget, will those facilities reopen? And she said to me, very matter-of-factly, no, because the people who ran them will have to do something else, and they're gone. And last week, Randy mentioned these forums are happening around the state. One of these forums was held last week in Champaign. I was listening to it today, and Governor Edgar was on the panel in Champaign. And one of the things he said that I think is very important for us all to remember, that if we were to conjure up a magic wand and get everyone to agree and come up with a budget tonight, the problem's not going to go away, that the damage has been done. And one of the things Governor Edgar said last week was it's going to take years for the damage to be undone. And so I think we all need to be prepared for that. I do want to have this, I do want to invite you to join us in this conversation. I do want to share one last story with you, if I can. In March of 2015, I was talking with a political scientist, and I don't remember which one it was that I was talking to. And they posited to me that they thought it was a very real possibility that there would not be a state budget for the 4 years of Governor Rauner's term. And I remember hearing that. My eardrums were still fluttering. It was still in my ear canal as I heard it. And I remember thinking, that is just absurd. Now we're 18 months later. More than 18 months later. And it's starting to seem a little less absurd. And I think it's time that these conversations happen so that your coworkers and your neighbors don't say, I don't really think this is affecting me. I don't see how this is having any impact. So what I'd like for us to do now is you tell us some of your effects, and we'll have microphones around, and we'll just continue the conversation. I do please remind you that we want to have a conversation that is in the spirit of Paul Simon. And we want to be mindful of differences of opinions. And we have a question in the back.
I admire the fact that you're the front line in putting your fingers in the holes in the dam. But I just can't imagine that there's no conscience within our legislature, including the governor, and not realizing the effects that they're creating. Because if we took all the dead people that vote in Chicago and put them in the legislature and replace them in the legislature with for those that are there now, at least there wouldn't be any opposition. At least they wouldn't be voicing opposition. How do we make that change? How do we make those people feel that guilt? How do we make our voices heard? I don't understand why they're not here, and the people like yourselves who are making it try to work are here. We need those people.
I've covered the General Assembly in Illinois for about 28 years now. And I really believe this. I don't think they're without conscience. I don't think they're bad people. I do think, on a personal level, I probably have some disagreements with them. That's okay. I don't think they're without conscience. I think they have some strong-held beliefs, and I think what is probably lost from the time that you were in Springfield, Kirk, is that sense of compromise being okay.
It is a different era. I mean, I came from an era, Brian mentioned the late Paul Simon. You know, I'm a conservative Republican, but he and I were friends, and I'm in his book, P.S., and we got along great. We didn't always agree on everything. I will say this, having been there, as Bob Gallo from the AARP said before we started this forum, make your voices heard. Definitely talk to your local legislators. You'd be surprised. Legislators, when they hear from three or four of you, they think that's a landslide that's out there. And you can make a difference with these folks. But really, this has come down to two people. It's come down to Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan. And, the legislators that are there on each side obviously are very cautious not to buck either of those individuals. One of the reasons I got out of the business is I just thought the money was out of control and controlling certain members that weren't maybe as independent as I was, or Dan Cronin, who's our county board chairman, was my seatmate down there, and there were some of us who were pretty independent. But talk to your local legislators. I do believe, like Brian said, Doesn't matter what party, doesn't matter whether they're from Chicago, the suburbs, or downstate. 99% of my former colleagues are probably tossing and turning at night, very, very troubled by what's going on. And I know more than ever, there's a group of them that are trying to force the issue. They signed letters to say, hey, let's get moving here. Talk to them and, you know, give them your own personal stories. I think most of them probably are tossing and turning and very troubled by what's going on. I will say one of the problems with waiting 2 years to do a budget is the hole keeps getting bigger and bigger because they're spending at levels that are unsustainable. You know, that puts pressure. You may sit here as a retiree tonight and say, wow, this is great. I live in a state that doesn't tax retirement benefits. But as that hole gets bigger and bigger, they got to come looking for more and more people to fill that hole. Or if you're a retiree, if you're a College of DuPage retiree or a state employee, you know, you may think you're fat and happy today because you are getting your retirement payments. Go talk to anybody that used to work for American Airlines. So everybody, whether you know it or not, is all in this together, and eventually it's going to explode. And you want to take care of this problem before you have a real, real, true explosion.
At the panel at the University of Illinois President Killeen mentioned that there are two rules of the hole. The first rule of the hole is to recognize that you're in a hole. The second rule of the hole is to stop digging. And I'm not sure if those rules have been recognized yet, but I think that that's definitely... Yeah.
I'd love to add on that I also feel that our state representatives, they do care. We had the privilege of being down in Springfield last week. We make a trip down there every year to meet with our legislators and to ask for their support for different bills that we have that will help our neighbors who are hungry. And this year, we were down there advocating on behalf of a bill, 3211, a House bill. And this is really apropos to us being here at College of DuPage, because this is a bill that would allow students that are enrolled in community colleges that are part of the Perkins program to receive SNAP benefits while they are in community college. Part of the typical regs around SNAP, which are food stamps, is that you can't receive those if you're in college. And so this is something that we have asked our state legislators to approve. These students are typically getting educated in things like security or dental hygienists or in-home health care. And so these are kids that are really trying to go and better themselves and hopefully get themselves off of SNAP for most of their adult life. Mm-hmm. We went around and we talked for our 13 counties, we talked to 14 of our different representatives, and we're able to share information about this bill. Again, it's a federally funded bill. It would be administered by the state, so the cost would be very little to the state. And we had very positive conversations. We're very hopeful that this will pass. Why will it pass? Because they actually care. And I'm talking about folks that I know, legislators I know, who really don't like food stamps. I mean, they really don't. They make that pretty clear to me. And yet, for this bill, explaining to them that we could take these few years, this season of these young people's lives, and provide them with some extra support while they're getting their education so they can be self-sufficient in the future, they were all about it. So I do think our legislators care. I think they're in a very, very tough position.
And I would just, as you leave this evening, if you go down two flights of stairs, there's a food pantry here at College of DuPage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That serves our students.
There are over a dozen university or community college food pantries across the state so far.
And
something that's really, they're popping up over the last couple of years.
It really speaks to, again, a hidden need.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. you walk around College of DuPage during the day, you may not think that mm-hmm. anyone on campus mm-hmm. needs to visit a food pantry. Mm-hmm. But there's a food pantry just downstairs.
Our directional universities here in Illinois have done a study on that and have seen that a very large percentage, they believe up to about 40% of all of our students in college are at some point food insecure, meaning that they don't always have the food resources that they need. And you can see that. I went to Northern Illinois University. We have the Husky Student Food Pantry out there. It just went on campus this year. It's been off campus for a few years. They have seen, since bringing it on campus, since advertising and saying, we are here for you every week, you can come get the food you need, participation has tripled in September. Mm. Students coming, getting the nutrition they need so that they can learn and then hopefully graduate and not need support anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I certainly think that they do care, but I have to say, I think that some of them are very inefficient, or they're not looking at efficiencies that could be dramatically changed. Yes, we have a huge budget deficit and stalemate on the budget, but in my opinion, and I can only really address the issues and the population that I serve and that my staff serve and all of the volunteers and peers serve, is that there are better ways to do it. And I don't believe anybody is really listening to us. We do talk to our legislators. We talk to them consistently. We show them better ways. We have a workforce development program. We have, as one example, we have a living room at our community center. And the living room is an alternative to going to the emergency room. So if you are experiencing a heightened level of mental health, anxiety, or depression, and in the past the only alternative was to go to the emergency rooms, which, let's face it, is not the best place if you're already suffering from an anxiety attack. In the best will in the world, and we have wonderful hospitals here in the county, but you're going to be triaged, you're going to be put down the list because you're not an emergency, and that's not going to be the right place for you. And for that, the likelihood is that you'll stay, there are many hours, you'll have a psych evaluation, you won't meet requirements to be hospitalized, which is, are you a danger to yourself or others? And you'll be told you need to make an appointment with your psychiatrist, assuming you have one. And for that, that cost, to whether it's to the taxpayer or to the individual's insurance, is about $3,000. The alternative, and these are popping up in small places across the state and in other parts of the nation, but they're still very, very small, is an alternative called a living room, which is a place that's run by peers. The person can go in, they can be seen immediately, have that situation de-escalated, and be hooked up with resources with follow-up. And that can be done for a little under $300. Our legislators know about this. They think it's a great idea, but do they want to do anything to help fund it? No. So in my opinion, with the population that I serve, I don't think they're bad people, and I hope they're staying awake at night, quite frankly, and not sleeping. I really do, because I certainly spend many nights lying awake worrying about where I'm going to be able to provide these services. But I think they have to listen. We are in a different environment, and I think they have to start listening to different ways of doing things, because there are better ways, and there are better ways economically to do things. We don't need thousands and thousands of people incarcerated at huge expense in the county jails. They need to be, those people need to be treated and helped and supported in the community. So, I think they're good people. I hope they're staying awake at night worrying, and I hope that they really do listen to better ways of doing things as we move forward.
Can we get clarity on whether the local representatives were actually invited to the forum?
I did reach out to representatives. The Senate's in session.
Right.
Okay.
And the House.
Well, I traveled.
They were working until about 5 o'clock this afternoon.
Going right away from the party line.
They were invited.
Yes.
And they have other commitments.
They have other commitments.
They can't be here.
Correct.
So it's kind of fair to comment appropriately that they are conscientious, they are concerned. We don't all agree with that. I understand that. But they are conscientious, they are concerned. We reach out to them. My local representative is not one of the key participants at this point. I believe Mr. Dillard said there's two people that can make a difference right now. I can't influence one of those people because I don't live in his district. I can only influence one of the two. And right now, I supported our current governor for his past election. I would be very hard-pressed to do that this time around, because I think he's done a very poor job in achieving any kind of consensus And I understand the tough nut on the other side, but he ain't doing what he said he was going to do. He has taken a posture, and that posture has existed for 2 years with no modification. I find that very unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. And then we have a question in the back.
I'm a little bit naive. Without a state budget, the state is not paying bills, a lot of bills. They collect all of their income taxes, they collect all of their corporate taxes. Where's all this money?
Well, and you know, it's an interesting situation. And I think it's one of the things, I'll take my share of lumps. I think this is one of the things that is happening that I don't know that we in the news media have done a very good job of explaining. Because, yes, the state is collecting money, and some bills are getting paid. They're getting paid as the money is available. But there's a situation in Illinois right now that is being exacerbated by time. In January of 2015, income tax rates in the state automatically went down. There was a temporary income tax increase, and that income tax increase sunset on January 1st of 2015. Then we did not get a new budget on June 30th of 2015. So what the state said was, we're just going to continue operating. And we're going to continue operating based on the revenue of the previous year. The revenue of the previous year was higher. So we're just going to spend at the higher rate. They are spending.
They are spending.
They're not paying bills. Right now, the estimate is Illinois will end this fiscal year with about $12 billion in unpaid bills. They are paying some, but they're paying bills from months and years ago. So what's happening is the rate of spend is outpacing the rate of revenue. And that's something that I don't know anyone has done a very good job of explaining. And it's a situation that makes this budget stalemate worse and worse and worse with every day.
And they did appropriate money for elementary and secondary education. You also have court orders in some cases. Yes. So you have the judiciary that's forcing spending. But like Brian said, they're spending up here. And they know the revenues because the income tax got rolled back to 3.75%. They're spending, you know, the gap is huge, and it gets larger and larger and larger every day. I will tell you, in one other stat that I picked up today, is I know that the Glen Ellen schools are owed over $2 million by the state of Illinois. And so local school districts, even though there's an appropriation for them, are falling behind and probably asking their comptroller or business officer every day, you know, have we seen the wire transfer from the state yet?
Yeah. My understanding, too, is that most of that budget, a vast majority of the budget, is not dollars that are actually allocated through the budget process. Most of them are
untouchable
dollars. Mandated. I believe it's as much as like 75% of the budget is mandated, and they can't touch it. So when they aren't paying bills, they can only pay it on the small portion of our state budget.